You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
Today's program is brought to you by SunsetLakeCBD.com. SunsetLakeCBD.com. Not only do they have great CBD products across the board, they are a they have great business practices. $15 minimum wage for their employees. The company is primarily employee owned. They practice regenerative agriculture practices in conjunction with the University of Vermont. They're outside of Burlington.
Fun place.
Fans of the show. They're a bunch of Bernie bros up there.
I love Burlington.
But with all that said, their products are fantastic. Matt's not here today to talk about his favorite, I guess, the smalls. But I've been occasionally, I will do a little bit of the smokables, and it's, I find it very relaxing, but without the sort of, psychedelic qualities. That's a little overstated, but, from, THC laden, cannabis, but, the CBD tincture has been a boon to my ability to sleep. I am almost totally off, what is that called? The Ambien. That's why I can barely remember it because of the times I took it.
Yeah.
But also they have a Arnica and beeswax and CBD salve that is fantastic. They have CBD infused coffee. They have gummy bears.
I love the gummy bears, by the way.
Oh, did you? They sent
me some stuff, and I've been using the gummy bears. Yeah. Those are my go-to.
They're pretty good. Right now, they are running a special sale, 25% off with the gift code GIFT25. GIFT25. You get 25% off of anything. Plus, you get a free 125 milligram salve if you order $75 or more. Free 750 milligram tincture if you order $100 or more worth of stuff. And you get both items for free if you order more than $125 or more. So check that out. GIFT25, 25% off, SunsetLakeCBD.com. They make great gifts. And they also, big time, been helpful for me in terms of sleeping and just relaxing. And in general, I've been leaning on that stuff quite a bit these days. SunsetLakeCBD.com. Right now, use gift code or promo code GIFT25. And this week, the Majority Report is brought to you by the civic engagement podcast, Future Hindsight. Join host Mila Atmos's conversation with Bernard Harcourt, the author of The Counter-Revolution, How Our Government Went to War Against Its Own Citizens. You'll learn why the U.S. has embraced a counterinsurgency governing paradigm. Listen to Future Hindsight wherever you get your podcasts or futurehindsight.com. Now on with this show. It is Friday, December 18th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Ben Dixon, proprietor, founder, host of The Benjamin Dixon Show. He'll be joining us. Also on the program today, coronavirus hospitalizations breaks new records. We're doing so daily. We head into what may very well be the darkest period of public health in this country's history. Meanwhile, an FDA panel endorses the Moderna vaccine yesterday, while the Trump administration botches the Pfizer vaccine rollout. Speaking of botched, the stimulus talks head to the weekend. The Republicans now want to snuff out Fed, city, and state loan programs. Congressman Deb Haaland, Biden's choice for Interior Secretary, the first Native American cabinet secretary in the history of this country.
Wow.
Win for progressives there, folks. Meanwhile, loss for progressives. Kathleen Rice beats out AOC for a seat on the Energy and Commerce Committee. That is a committee that holds a huge influence on issues like Medicare for All or Green New Deal. Massive cybersecurity breach still being assessed as apparently the National Nuclear Weapons Agency also breached. Democrats in the House introduce a resolution calling on Joe Biden to forgive college debt up to $50,000. And the billionaire Sackler family, in front of a House oversight hearing, deny responsibility for the massive opioid epidemic that their company, Purdue Pharma, was the catalyst of. Supreme Court rejects a Kentucky religious school's attempt to avoid COVID restrictions. All this and much, much more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. Emma Vigeland is here with me as always. Emma, it is Friday and it is our last, and as you can see, it's casual Friday. I'm soft collared shirt.
Casualty.
Yes.
Yeah, casually. There you go.
Soft collared shirt. And then of course I got a little bit of a hat head because walking through the cold today. It is our last Friday of 2020. Our live one anyways.
We'll have the best of shows on Christmas. No, not on Christmas. I'm sorry. Christmas Eve and the other Friday.
Yeah, too. They'll run through that week. But for the time being, this is it for the casual Fridays. I for one am super excited for 2020 to end and to never think about it again. You know, one of the things that's fascinating about the Spanish flu pandemic from 1918 was how much it was erased from the national consciousness in history. I mean, very few books had been written about it for years and years and years.
Right.
And in the books I've read about it that note that, it seems like somewhat of a mystery. And now I can understand it.
You just want this just move past it and never think about it again. I would love that too.
I can understand that inclination. But we do have vaccines that are beginning to be rolled out. The Trump administration said that, or I should say there were officials in states around the country that have been alerted as of Wednesday of this week that their second shipments of the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine was not going to come in or was going to be severely curtailed. And there were health departments in states across the country that were starting to get a little bit worried about this and wondering if they could, meet the target of getting to 20 million people by the year's end.
Right.
Apparently the federal government is telling state officials, we just don't have the supply. There's a problem with the production line, essentially, for Pfizer. However, Pfizer released a statement yesterday saying that the company faced no production difficulties. They had many more doses immediately available than were being distributed. This is a quote. We have millions more doses sitting in our warehouse, but as of now, we've not received any shipment instructions for additional doses.
Which now, should be being pushed forward by Operation Warp Speed, a.k.a. the Trump administration.
I mean, the idea that, you know, there was plenty of windup for this. They had plenty of time. On one hand, it's stunning. On the other hand, it is the Trump administration – and
is the bug, not the feature of incompetence.
Yes. And frankly, you know, I may be unfair just to blame the Trump administration. It is the entire conservative ideology that government is a hindrance, and therefore it is very difficult for them to staff, to get staff, to create initiatives where government is actually doing something, because they are ideologically against that proposition.
Right.
And this is what we get. Meanwhile, speaking about ideologically against a proposition of government being effective, here's Tucker Carlson last night, the big truth teller on Fox News, essentially saying, you don't want to take the vaccine, don't take the vaccine. We still don't know. And my understanding is Moderna did some tests on the ability for someone who has been inoculated by the vaccine to pass on the COVID virus. Their tests seem to suggest that because it stops the replication of the virus, that you will not have a viral load large enough to infect another person if you have the vaccine. Again, 95% effective, they say. Pfizer apparently never ran those tests or has not released that data. But the point being that this vaccine protects other people, not just yourself. And just broadly speaking, the whole concept of herd immunity as developed through a vaccine, that is the theory too. You walk into a room because a certain percentage have been vaccinated, the percentage chance of you catching COVID is necessarily diminished than right. It would be otherwise. Here's Tucker Carlson, however, though, with his own perspective on that.
What a cheerful patient she must be. We've got to assume she is in any case because we can't really know. The authorities didn't release her name. All we know is she's a highly satisfied customer, yet another. Have a vaccine and a smile. Just do it. So how are the rest of us supposed to respond to a marketing campaign like this? Well, nervously. Even if you're strongly supportive of vaccines, and we are, even if you recognize how many millions of lives have been saved over the past 50 years by vaccines, and we do, it all seems a bit much. It feels false, because it is. It's too slick. The Gandalf guy was euphoric because he got a shot. It wasn't heroin. It was the corona vaccine. The lady who couldn't breathe is enthusiastic as she is rushed to the emergency room? Come on. This is patronizing. Stop with the slogans. Better to treat Americans like adults. Explain the benefits, be honest about the risks, and let the rest of us decide. In this country, we control our own bodies. They're always telling us that. But no, suddenly the rules have changed. On the question of the corona vaccine,
I want you to just like contemplate what's going on here, right? He's saying, allow us to be adults and assess the risk. But he is what he is doing right now is his own assessment.
Exactly.
Supposedly completely in favor of vaccinations, supposedly understand the value of it. And then his entire piece is, I am skeptical that there are people out there that excited to get the vaccine. And therefore, I am going to now project my skepticism of the excitement that other people have on this vaccine onto the possible efficacy of this vaccine.
As if Ian McKellen is an executive at Pfizer or Moderna, and it's just his personal opinion that he is excited as an older man that he doesn't have to worry that much about COVID now that he has the vaccine. So what does that say? It's not, this isn't a government institution that's saying it. And by the way, the people who are pushing the vaccine through aggressively are the Trump administration. It's bipartisan. He is feeding into a culture of online skepticism about things. This is why he does UFO segments, even though, you know, whatever, I'm down for UFO segments, but it's a part of a larger whole. He wants to breed skepticism and appeal to a specific kind of alt-right online culture.
Well, it's not just alt-right. I mean, he is trying to appeal. I mean, I think that his appeal, I think, is maybe limited to a certain extent to the alt-right, but that's a function of like his pre-existing audience. But he is appealing to anti-vaxxers. He is providing just one more talking point for people who have a skepticism of vaccinations, and offering nothing but the nature of the marketing campaign to feed that skepticism.
And not even the marketing campaign, individual people speaking to the news about their experience getting the vaccine.
Let's continue with that.
The rest of us decide. In this country, we control our own bodies. They're always telling us that. But no, suddenly the rules have changed. On the question of the corona vaccine, our leaders are definitely not pro-choice. Their view is do what you're told and don't complain. No uncomfortable questions. Those aren't just suggestions. They're rules, and Silicon Valley plans to enforce them. Twitter's announced a new policy to censor any unauthorized inquiry about the vaccine.
Now he's just made a big – I want people to also be aware of the big jump he just made.
Huge leap.
He's gone from public officials encouraging people to take the vaccine as opposed to mandating the vaccine. And we have – mandates for vaccines if you want to send your kids to school.
As Mike Pence gets the vaccine today.
Indeed. But these are just encouragements. And they jump all of a sudden now into private industry. And is private industry, like, I mean, I was trying to figure out where is he going to go with that, with the big tech is forcing you to take vaccines? No. Big tech is policing their own websites. If you have a problem with a company that is that large policing its own websites, and what you really need to do is make sure that company's not so large that they're policing the websites has that type of impact.
Support break up big tech, Tucker. I don't know if you've, but it's so much easier to be a general skeptic without actually providing any answers or tailoring your skepticism to, say, a government institution or a tech company. You just make it this all big amorphous blob of skepticism that you can direct your audience towards, and then you never do journalism or any actual empirical analysis. You just say, I don't know, I'm going to feed into your impulses to distrust things.
Well, it also lets them do is say, I said I was a supporter of vaccines, and so it's not, he gets his cake and eats it too. Let's continue.
Announced a new policy to censor any unauthorized inquiry about the vaccine, or as the company put it, false or misleading narratives about COVID-19 vaccinations. Among other things, Twitter is censoring any claim that this vaccine might be used to, quote, control populations. So whatever you do, don't say this is social control, because if you do, the richest and most powerful people in the world will act in perfect coordination to shut you down immediately. So to repeat, there is no social control going on here. None. And if you suggest otherwise, Twitter social controls will censor you.
Are his ratings dropping a little bit? Because this sounds like one of those I need to juice my ratings moments that you occasionally see.
Well,
because
big tech and his railing against it tests well. So you got to tie it into this.
I'll have you know that the guy who has an audience of at least a couple million people on a daily night is telling you, as he expresses skepticism about the vaccine, is telling you that if you express skepticism about the vaccine, the richest people in the country won't let you speak. As he sits at 8 p.m. on a piece of communications real estate that reaches millions of people, that has been funded to the tune of millions of dollars. That's quite a trick.
Yeah, he's a press, but he's speaking to you as he makes what, $20 million
yes,
a year?
The skepticism dark web or whatever it is, the dark cable station. We'll get to Ben Dixon in just a moment. But first, this episode also brought to you by Magic Spoon. And this is where I usually say also my breakfast was today, but I am out. I am complaining, so I had to order a bunch of
he actually
new magic
was
spoon.
Complaining before the show started that he didn't have any magic spoon left.
And they have a special flavor they have like temporary flavors. What is that called? I don't know. But that's neither here nor there.
Okay.
The pitch for Magic Spoon is for you to look back on your favorite experiences with cereal as a kid. And you think about that, whether it was like the chocolatey one or the fruity one or the frosted one or the strawberry one.
Strawberry sounds good.
Yeah. I don't know if they have that right now. That's like a, that was also a temporary flavor, but blueberry they have. And you drink it up. You look, you know, you, the milk is left over. You, you know, you drink it up because it's all flavored and all sugary. Yeah. The problem is it was full of sugar, tremendous amount of sugar. And if you ever go and try and buy breakfast cereal for your kids, you realize how just infused with sugar all these cereals are. However, Magic Spoon has created a way for you to relive those that childhood love of cereal. They've discovered a way of creating a cereal with zero sugar, 11 grams of protein, and only 3 net grams of carbs in each serving. And now they're letting you build your very own custom box because they have a bunch of different flavors. You can choose from the best-selling cocoa, fruity, frosted, blueberry, plus brand new flavors, including peanut butter and cinnamon. Those two are my favorites. Although there was one on, I'm not going to say what it is. They did, I don't know. Sometimes they don't want you to mention the copy, but it's a special, like seasonal. And I ordered a bunch of those too.
I hope
it's coming. I got one coming to the office. I got a box coming to the office.
I got some coming so I can snack on it.
It honestly tastes amazing. It is keto friendly. It is gluten free. It's grain free. It's soy free. It's low carb and it's GMO free. And they sweeten it with monk fruit. I have no idea what that is.
Sounds natural though.
It's natural and it's fantastic. I can't speak highly enough about it. And go to magicspoon.com/majority report. You build your own custom variety box. Try it today. But be sure to use the promo code majority report at checkout to get free shipping. I forgot to do that today.
You did?
Yes. It kills me. I was thinking about emailing and then it's like embarrassing because I'm like,
it's
like,
just too much effort for you.
Yeah. Well, it's not even just much effort. It's like, yeah, no, that's my coupon code. Forget it. Magic Spoon, so confident their product is backed with 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they refund your money. No questions asked. That's magicspoon.com/majority report. Use the code majority report for free shipping. Use the code.
Do it.
We thank Magic Spoon for sponsoring the podcast and my breakfast and sometimes my late night snack. I'm not going to lie. Also, 2020 has been tough on kids, tough on parents who are trying to figure out how to you know, give their kids a good education. One of the things that's hard is that I would get a lot of my tips on like, what should my kids read by seeing other parents? And I drop off my son, like, yeah, what books are they reading? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's been tough. Well, Literati Kids has book clubs for children's 0 to 12, and each club has age-appropriate selections tailored to what your kid needs. This has been a huge boon for us. And they also include in the books artwork, stickers, stuff with his name on it, or I'm sure your kid's name on it. Yeah, I'm sure everybody's going to get something with Saul that says on it. But they got a bunch of different goodies in each box. You can get gift subscriptions. They're available for 1, 3, 6, or 12 months worth of books. It is a great way to give a present and give it throughout the year. It's been fantastic for us because, you know, Saul goes through a bunch of different books. Then I run out of ideas. Like, there's only so many times you can go online to find these things. And what I like about Literati is that books show, they come up and then he gets to choose the ones that he likes.
Oh, nice.
And then from there, we go on to other books that these books, you know, sort of recommend or maybe the writer or something like that. It really is, it's incredibly helpful. And it's fun for him. It's kids love getting packages. See, go to literati.com/majority for 25% off your first two orders. Pick your kids' book club gift today. Remember, no one else has kids' book clubs like these. Only at literati.com, literati.com/majority, can you get 25% off your first two orders and receive 5 incredible kids' books curated by experts delivered to your door every month. That's literati.com/majority. Make your little one's holiday season unforgettable this year. All right. Now it's time to welcome to the program.
The one and only.
The proprietor of the Benjamin Dixon Show. Of course, I'm talking about Ben Dixon himself. Ben, welcome.
Sam, thank you for having me. Always a pleasure. I didn't know if I was going to get any invites anywhere this week. It's been kind of a toxic, kind of tight week. So thanks for having me on.
Oh, yeah. tough week for you this week, huh? Yeah, no, there's been a lot of strum and drang online in the progressive circles.
Yeah, that's all.
I don't want to get into the online stuff, but we do have stuff to talk about in terms
of
the committee hearing and how, you know, what role progressives are playing in the Democratic Party. But I want to work backwards a little bit with this because one of the, and of course we've also got the stimulus and everything that's happening with the revelations this week about the Trump administration's perspective on how to deal with COVID and how they're doing it with their the vaccination. I mean, it's hard to imagine they can actually screw that up, but they've done it.
Yeah.
Let's start with this. Let's start with Georgia. What's happening in Georgia? Because so much of what could happen in Georgia is going to really, I think, define how we get out of this recession that's coming. I mean,
yeah.
And we'll back into the talk about the stimulus because the latest is that the Republicans are trying to now scuttle the Fed's authority to provide low cost loans to municipals and states, and so we're going to need the Senate if we're going to avoid a really anemic recovery here. But what's happening in Georgia?
You know, Georgia, the race is happening in earnest. The text messages are flying. It's almost like it's November 2nd again. You're getting 30 text messages a day, and we welcome them all because that means that there are people who are organizing, who are using their time, and people who are donating, ensuring that these text messages and phone calls can go out. So there's a lot of organizing that's happening. A lot of money coming into the state. And so far, I know at least several organizations that are doing it right by sending that money to organizing groups that organize to win in 2020. In November, those same groups are on the ground. New Georgia Project, Black Male Voter Project, they're all out here really doing it. Really American is in the state with a lot of billboards that really touch on the nerve of the divide that's in the Republican Party. There's a lot of divides that are happening. They're trying to coalesce, but I think we may have a slight advantage over them because the people fighting for Georgia never stopped after the election day, whereas Republicans had a little spell where they were busy fighting each other.
Interesting. What tell us about those divisions. I mean, I think we see it a little bit, you know, it's, but tell us more. I mean, I heard Kemp got really pissed the other day because, you know, these election officials are getting
death threats,
harassed and death threats.
Yeah. And Kemp was attacked by Donald Trump directly. And what it is it's ironically enough, it's very eerily familiar. You have a segment of the right that is trying to force the establishment to continue to follow Donald Trump down the line of overthrowing the election results, overthrowing democracy. There's a very loud vocal faction of that Republican Party here in Georgia. And there's a lot of anger at the Georgia Republican Party for allowing the state to slip into the hands of the Democratic Party on November 3rd. That said, those are the divides and they are inflaming them themselves, but, you know, with some strategic help from other organizations that are just pointing out the truth that the Republicans didn't deliver Georgia for Donald Trump.
My understanding is that the early vote counts are enormous for a runoff election.
Yeah, I don't have the exact numbers, but just the photos that are coming, I know we're into the hundreds of thousands who have showed up already. We don't know the split of that just yet, but there are lines that look like November 3rd that are happening all over the country. And this weekend is early voting in Georgia, so you can vote on tomorrow or Sunday in person. So we're encouraging people to make sure they do that.
This is, I think, not gotten enough attention because if it is the case, as it was reported over the past couple of days, that Mitch McConnell's very worried about not delivering a stimulus bill so that Loeffler and Perdue can go out there. And you tell me if you're seeing that they're getting hit with not having provided any stimulus. If there are, if 30, 40, 50% of the voting has already taken place.
Right.
Or more.
It's already baked in.
before this, you know, those people are all voting based upon that understanding of the electorate. Now,
do they have a sense of how many people have early voted already?
Right. No, we are into the, hey, Emma, how you doing? We are into the hundreds of thousands at this point. And the thing is that the turnout here is like, it's going to be lower than the general election, but they're already breaking records for a special election in terms of turnout.
And so, and we don't have a sense of what the partisan breakdown is there. And
you
I don't
imagine
know.
It leans Democrat just based on past.
Well, also the counties that have such a large turnout. I know Fulton County has a huge turnout right now for early voting, and it's a predominantly African-American community. And, you know, it's, you know, traditionally Democrats, just so long as John Ossoff and Warnock and Joe Biden don't say something to offend us, they'll keep turning out. So it's looking good. I think it's looking good. It's still going to be tight. And I don't think anyone should let off the throttle at all. Keep donating, keep phone banking, keep text banking. And I think we could pull out a win.
Oh,
as,
for sure.
As of 7:30 a.m. this morning, Reuters reported that more than 1.1 million Georgians have early voted already. That's nuts.
And that's including the mail. I believe that's including the mail-in ballots.
It's 4 days of early in-person voting and 4 weeks of mail-in voting.
Indeed. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, the mail-in voting was like people did that right away. Like the ballots were requested immediately. Once we knew there was going to be a runoff and the infrastructure was set in place, the ballots were requested immediately. So I didn't know that full number, 1.1 million. And you know, I think it's just going to keep ticking up.
Reported this morning. So, that is stunning. One question, because I think there is a bit of a, Sam's pumped up.
Well, at this point, prior to the November election, there had been 1.2 million.
That's
votes.
It. Exactly.
To be off by only 100,000. That's
wow.
Extraordinary. Wow. Now, I should say that in the November election, the total turnout was 5 million. Right. So you're at 20% right now and you're going into the big weekend of in-person voting. And presumably it's going to slow down during the holidays and whatnot and ramp back up the last. But I mean, if you're getting close to,
20% already, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty significant. Now, we should say that I think what 2020 general election showed was that big turnout is not necessarily such a huge favor for Democrats. But who knows? I mean, you know.
Right. And there's so many factors here. I mean, it wasn't a huge boon for Democrats, I guess, when it came to Trump, because Trump, his coalition is so obscure and it's hard to figure out because he turned out non-voters in the way that past Republicans did. And I don't fully know if I remember that data, but what the whole the biggest factor in this is Trump suppressing the Republican vote, right? Which it could be a liberal fantasy, right? But it could not be. Do you have any sense on the ground, Ben, even though you haven't been able to leave your house?
I know, right? So on the ground is still, kind of figurative at this point because, I'm not playing around with this pandemic. But the word on the street, I think is what we're looking for. The word on the street really is that there is a genuine divide in the Republican Party. There's a lot of anger that's coming from them, right? It's the ad campaign that was run on the billboards by Really American kind of exploited that, but it was a divide that was there. And I think that divide actually really matters because Donald Trump has shown that he has no regard for the actual Republican Party. And he's more than happy to stand by and to continue to divide. I mean, he attacked the governor of Georgia, right? The Republican leader of the state of Georgia. And clearly that's going to cause a rift in the party as we lead up to this special election.
All right. So let's talk about the stimulus a little bit, and then we'll move into sort of this question of leverage in the Democratic Party that the progressives have. With every 100,000 people that end up voting, or half a million people that end up voting early, or a million people that end up voting in Georgia, the relevance of passing the stimulus diminishes. Now, maybe not necessarily in a big way, because maybe I'm somewhat reluctant to vote, so I'm not going to run out the door and vote. And this is really more about a depressed Republican turnout than it is somebody sort of like changing their mind as to whether they're, you know, it's someone who's just like, well, I'm on the fence and maybe it would be better to not have Mitch McConnell be the leader because they can't deliver any of the stimulus. So we have this stimulus fight that's going on right now, and it appears that it's hit another snag. And this is after reporting that as of yesterday, Donald Trump, his advisors had to keep him out of the mix because he wanted to go in with a $2,000 stimulus check. I think, like, you know, like he's thinking now, and it's sort of, you got to hand to him. Like he's right. He's right, but he's not thinking about it in terms of policy. He's thinking like, I'm going to start a TV station, or I'm going to go back onto The Apprentice, or I'm going to, you know, put out a line of steaks or whatever it is.
Or I'm going to run in 2024.
Or I'm going to run in 2024.
I'm not rolling that out.
Or wanted to make it look like I could run in 2024 so that I could be a kingmaker. And to send out a check to everybody for $2,000, that's a nice sort of parting gift, essentially. And they had to hold him back. And now what we have is that the Republicans are not only is there no funding for cities and states in the primary bill that is being debated. The Republicans are now saying they want to curtail the Federal Reserve's ability to provide low-cost loans to states and cities, among other places, essentially. There is some debate as to whether this is a curtailment of the Fed's powers that existed even before this. They have done some unprecedented things during the course of this in providing loans. First off loans to some segments of public and private, and but it has been a backstop that's been important. And so, you know, what do you make of all of just this happening now, Ben? Because, you know, to me, there is a fundamental disconnect between Nancy Pelosi not having taken the $1.8 trillion deal back before the election, and the idea that she would take a not even half a fraction of that deal today,
right?
Where do you come down?
I come down on the issue that they really have no clue what's happening outside of Washington D.C. Like, there's a lot of families that are hurting, right? I mean, and as cliche as that phrase is, we're really at the epitome of what it means for families to be hurting financially in breadlines as we go to the holiday season, as people are trying to celebrate or at least just trying to survive. The government has abdicated its responsibility to us and has been doing so since March, quite honestly. Like, we got the last check that people got was in March, and that was anemic at best. And so they are showing us that they really have a disconnect in what's happening with the majority of America. And I dare say, I don't think they care, right? I don't think it's just that they have a lack of information. I think they fully are aware of what's happening, everyone that's in Washington, D.C., and they've decided to risk that America's not going to respond because 300,000 people died and we're still just going on with the same regime. So I don't think they have any fear of the people. I think that's what's happening.
Well, so let me ask you this. With that urgency in mind, I mean, this is the thing that's been sort of dogging me, and I have a tough time. I honestly don't know. I'm glad I don't have to make this decision. Let's put it that way. Back in October, like I say, $1.8 trillion. There was a $1,200 check in there. There was $400 for weekly unemployment insurance, $300 billion for state and local. The liability shield was unclear. Mm. Don't know. I would imagine McConnell might have been able to get it in there, although he didn't want to take this vote. And the other problem was it may help Trump win in October. Mm-hmm. I mean, because there are a lot of people who feel that that first round of checks actually helped him quite a bit. This deal is $900 billion, $600 checks, $300 weekly for unemployment. Unemployment is not as long as the first as the last one, but there may be a way. Right. There is $0 in state and local, no liability shield, and may help the Republicans win the Senate in Georgia. I guess the question is, do you take this deal? If you think that the leverage is there now, and it wouldn't be later. Now, obviously, you got to push for more, right? Because you got to do that. But at one point, the leverage goes away. Yeah. On January 6th, the leverage is not there if McConnell's doing this because he needs to convince some, maybe some on the fence, you know, suburban Republicans that, hey, we're doing something. But maybe it goes away January 3rd. Maybe it goes away January 2nd. Maybe it goes away January 4th. I don't know. Right. But do take the deal because, you know, on one hand, there are people really, really hurting.
Yeah. You know, that's that. I'm with you. You started that by saying you're glad you're not the one that has to make that decision, right? Because there's a lot of politics at play. I think we look at the causal link between Nancy Pelosi rejecting that deal at that point and the fact that Republicans had been rejecting the deal that she put out prior to that, and that they delayed this long enough to place it right before the election for political purposes, including the other part that you mentioned, the liability shield, right? I think that's what she primarily used to justify them not signing off on it, was because they did not want to provide that liability shield. I agree with that component, but do you do that at the expense of people? Well, then you have to ask yourself the question, if Republicans are doing this as a political football to win in 2020, what is going to be more damaging, to wait to January for a stimulus check or have Donald Trump for 4 more years? So if I was having to do that calculus, I wouldn't want to do it. But I mean, honestly, if you really think about this strategically, we could have had $1,200, but also 4 more years of Donald Trump, 300,000 more people dead. I don't know where I would have fell on that decision, but I mean, I'm glad I'm not the one who had to make that one.
It's tough.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a bit of a false choice that she put up there in order to justify the fact that she basically turned down the White House's deal. And who knows if it would have even passed McConnell, but I think putting McConnell in that position, you know, you would have gotten relief for Americans, and then he would have been, if he turned it down, then you could have gone after Republicans in general. Republicans are in the way of standing, are standing in the way of these $1,200 checks. But I do think this deal, I think you push through the weekend and you see what you get. It seems like they're going to stay through the weekend before they go for Christmas break. And it doesn't seem like they're going to come to a resolution tonight, even though the continuing resolution, I think, does expire at midnight.
Well, the continuing resolution is a separate problem, right? That is the $1.4 trillion government essentially operating budget. And it's quite possible the government will shut down over the weekend. We won't feel it that much. And by the time things wind down, and then they'll pass it on Monday. They've done that a couple of times.
Yeah.
But this is, I think they want to try and get it all done at one time. I don't know if they will, but I guess it's really just a question of like, you know, how much, you know, what do you get out of this? And how hurting people are. And maybe the idea is you hope you win Georgia anyways and you get a second bite at the apple. But I don't know. It's a tough decision to make.
Yeah, it's tough. And I mean, David Dang was saying on the show yesterday that there already is going to be a lapse in benefits. So do you want to roll the dice and just continue to elongate the process where these benefits aren't reaching people? Because there will be a lapse anyway. I don't know. I think I would negotiate through the weekend and still take something, because the economic harm is so severe and the cliff that people are facing. We have, you know, 20 million almost Americans on unemployment. There are anywhere between 2 and 5 million Americans who could be evicted in the month of January, and then millions to come. So the assistance needs to come too. And there's over $20 billion of rental assistance in this package. To me, I think the situation's too dire to play games with it. And luckily, as you're saying, Ben and Sam, it seems like a lot of voting is going to be done over the weekend. So you just hope that it doesn't reach enough people, or their minds are already made up by that time.
Let's move on to just this, the revelations this week, and then we'll get to the leverage in the Democrat. We need to wrap up this week. We need to mention this, the stunning story that there's two of them, actually. One was, there are two sort of young Republicans who were appointed to the CDC as political appointees who left the agency recently, maybe over the summer, because they were just could not, as bushy-eyed, bright tailed Republicans.
Heritage
yeah, Republican. Heritage Foundation Republicans who are standing out there to basically like, you know, you don't get through that without a lot of skepticism about the functioning of government. They got in and they were just appalled at how politicized the science became with the CDC. They could not do anything without – they couldn't put out morbidity statistics. They couldn't put out guidelines without it being pushback from the White House. And then also we now know that there was an ongoing belief in the Trump administration that we should be and we are in some respects pursuing a herd immunity strategy, which of course is absurd, but also like stunning that they kept it secret.
Well, it wasn't the best kept secret. It was whether or not we actually believed Donald Trump when he said herd mentality. And when Larry Kudlow was talking about just go back to work if you're feeling good, like they've been pushing herd immunity since day one, square one. But it is significantly different. And I agree with you, like these testimonies, like what is being said, what's coming out is shocking that it is so appalling that some Republicans can't even tolerate it or stomach it. And that is something, right? That does say a lot about how far gone we are in a pandemic when we absolutely need the CDC to be at its best. Donald Trump has managed to make it at his worst.
Has this been exploited enough by the Democrats?
Of course not. Of course not. I mean, the Democratic Party is a problem, to be sure. And I think everyone who has listened to you any amount of time, or Sam, if they listen to me or Emma, they know we are fully aware of the problematic nature of the Democratic Party. They are insufficient and unequal to the task of taking on this Republican Party.
Yeah, I think it's there is. And, you know, and to be fair, there is they have agendas which, you know, are misaligned from taking them on the Republicans on in the same way the Republicans have in terms of taking on the Democrats.
Exactly,
right.
Exactly.
I mean, it's like this would not be a dilemma for the Republicans. Do we provide aid to people? Do we take half a loaf when we know they're suffering out there and risk losing Georgia and not getting any more, another bite, you know, another part of that loaf? I mean, that is whereas, you know, it's very hard for me to wrap my head around, but the pathology involved in like, I don't know, we have clip today that we'll play of Rand Paul, who is saying that if we give direct payments, we'll hurt the economy in the long run, which of course is just an absolute bunk because of deficits. I mean, that's all bunk. That's all just literally, that's quackery at this point.
I mean, Ron Johnson just blocked the $1,200 checks for Americans, and he cited the deficit. And Einstein posted a headline from 2017 where it says U.S. Senator Ron Johnson backs tax cuts, dismisses $1 trillion projected increase in federal debt, because this is what the game that they're going to be playing now.
Of course, it's quackery, and it's been proven as quackery. But so the Democrats have, you know, and so basically what they're doing is they're basically just saying, like, we're just for no reason going to it is for political advantage. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. By starving the Fed's ability, by starving our ability as a government to fiscally stimulate the economy by giving money to cities and states so they can, and their projected shortfall is somewhere around $300 billion in terms of teachers, in terms of firefighters and cops and city works and programs to help feed people. The biggest drag on the recovery under Obama was hiring in the government sector. You go back to all the recoveries that have taken place following Clinton, following Reagan, following Bush. You need to have, they all increased government hiring across the board, not necessarily Fed, although somewhat Fed, but state and local. And that is money that comes in from the feds because they're not as sensitive to things like, you know, property taxes or sales taxes going down. And The way, if you want to set out to make sure that this economy does not recover, and I think they all feel quite confident that the stock market will be fine, their rich benefit will be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you want to make sure that this economy does not recover with any type of speed so that you're set up for 2022, the way you do that is you inhibit the ability of the federal government, or in this case, the Federal Reserve, for providing any type of funding or liquidity for cities and states. And that's the way you make a recovery anemic. And they don't care. They just don't care.
That's the thing I think a lot of people aren't taking into their calculus as they create these strategies. There's a lack of concern. They don't care. The politicians absolutely do not care. They do know that they can push America to the brink because we're at the brink. They made it past the George Floyd protests in the middle of a pandemic when, I mean, by that time, I don't know what, 100,000 people probably had died at that point. I'm not sure because it's been such a long 10 years. 2020 has been such a long decade. I can't remember which month that was. But the fact of the matter is that politicians are operating under the premise that they will never be held accountable by the American people. They have no fear of the American people. 300,000 people are dead. They don't care that they can play football with our livelihoods and our life, for that matter. And I think that's a fundamental problem. But on the flip side of it, the question has to be asked, why are Americans tolerating this? One, because they're just trying to feed their kids and they don't have time to lead a revolution. And then two, because they're just trying to survive a pandemic.
And here is also another example. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. They don't care. And Mitch McConnell doesn't even care about Republicans who are, I guess, perceived subsidiary to him. Put this up here. This is from Business Insider. This is a story. You got Republican mayors across the country who desperately need this aid. And Mitch McConnell's like, I'm going to pretend like you don't even exist. It's a blue state bailout. and so I don't know what you do with that, frankly.
And those Republican mayors are not going to break ranks. So.
I mean, what are they going to do beyond that? They're not going to blame. I mean, and even if they do to a certain extent, like, I don't know, look at like folks like Raffensperger and Kemp. I mean, they're just the Republican voter also doesn't care.
Right.
And that is to their benefit. All right. Let's look on the other side of the ledger, as it were. We see the Republicans are terrified of the Republican base. And their ideological base. Let's put it that way. The Democratic Party is not.
Right.
And part of it, I think, is because the ideological base on the left is far more fractured. And the dynamics are very different. I mean, I know you're laughing. Yeah. We're talking about like,
it's true though. It's true.
Sort of like online, part of this is like an online phenomena that I think most people aren't aware of, but that said, I think it's very easy to underestimate the importance of a small group of very vocal people in terms of fashioning a narrative.
Right.
That's going on. There have been pressure on, or at least a talk of trying to pressure progressives in Congress to leverage their vote for Nancy Pelosi for speaker. And it's been suggested that you get a vote on Medicare for All.
Which could be counterproductive as.
Yes. I mean, and putting it aside, like the value of that ask in particular, and it's sort of like blown up into this sort of now, a toxic brew of essentially attacking some people anyways, attacking AOC because she doesn't think that's the smartest thing to do at this point. But somebody with a YouTube channel does think it's the smartest thing to do. And so therefore
we know,
but while this is all going on, with the left,
right?
The left who was trying to push the Democrats, there was an important vote taking place in the House.
Yes, it will.
And, this is coming on the heels. Like, there's been some progressive wins. Deb Haaland just got nominated by Biden to be Interior Secretary. There's some on the National Council of Economic Advisors, some, sort of to the left side of the And on climate, things pretty good, you know. Yeah. Nothing, you know,
pretty unoffensive.
Nothing dazzling, but okay. Strong. All right, so this is happens in the House. AOC has been lobbying to get a role on the Energy and Commerce Committee. The Energy and Commerce Committee deals with things like the Green New Deal, deals mm-hmm. with things like Medicare for All. If you don't get it past those committees, it is dead as legislation or initiative.
But some people don't know how that works.
Some people don't know how that works, but I don't want to focus this on one idiot
yes.
online.
Yeah,
I mean, this is a bigger story.
No, I know.
And the caucus, the steering committee, essentially votes on who sits on this committee.
Listen.
AOC was fully endorsed by the New York delegation. This was a New York seat. The entire delegation endorsed AOC. Only part of the delegation endorsed Kathleen Rice. She's from Long Island. And however, the steering committee voted 46-13 to give it to Rice. And we have a situation where, and Rice, we should say, actively did not vote for Pelosi.
Right.
The last time she ran for a majority leader. Now, Pelosi does not have a say in this, supposedly. She, sure. I have no doubt, influences the steering committee to some extent. But the steering committee itself is also older and, you know, from a different generation and more conservative.
And it was partly retaliatory because Henry Cuellar right. of Texas, he wrote or he said in a call, I'm taking into account who works against other members in primaries and who doesn't.
Yes. Well, I mean, this is the way that politics work. I mean, when and that I think the left doesn't seem to understand that when AOC exerts her political cachet to build progressive strength, there's another force on the other side that's going to say, like, well, we're going to push back too.
Right.
And so while AOC is taking heat online,
mm-hmm.
Not, you know, forcing a performative vote, the left could have been trying to pressure the steering committee to put AOC in a position where she could actually have done work to forward these goals.
I'm just so patiently waiting for you to give me the chance to speak on this for Sam.
Go off.
Because the difference between the Tea Party and the dumb, dumb left, as our friend coined them, is that they seized power and used that power from the pressure of the people on the establishment. What the left is asking us to do right now is to use our social power to obliterate progressive political capital on Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
And that is the most imbecilic use of our power when we miss the opportunity to do literally. Why are we trying to dethrone who is the top progressive? I don't personally care who's the top progressive. If it's AOC, if it's Bernie Sanders, as long as they're up there fighting for us, what they need us doing is primarying these centrists. If you really want to be, I'm going to take it back to 1990s. Y'all got to forgive me. This old school, but you really want to be rowdy, rowdy and bad about it. Primary every single centrist who we already know doesn't support Medicare for All, we already know they don't support the Green New Deal. And we also know that even if we play nice with them, or even if we play hardball, they are coming after every single one of us because of our ideological differences. It's okay for Rice to have actively not supported Nancy Pelosi because she is not going to be fighting on behalf of Medicare for All or the Green New Deal. They might have been enemies on that day, but they are not ideological enemies. And so we could have came into the fray on behalf of progressive voices gaining power to actually get Medicare for All. But a lot of our friends on the left thought differently of it. So I'll leave it at that.
And you know, like, you know, we obviously have a certain myopia because we're online shows and, you know, this is the space in which we deal with. And, you know, if we were heading a government adjacent organization, you know, that raised money from Democratic donors, we would more keyed into what the state of play is with other organizations. But from a media perspective and from a social media perspective, which, you know, I think it's for some people, they think this is irrelevant. But I mean, if you look into the future, folks, I can tell you right now, so much of this is going to play out there because that's where a lot of people under the age of 40 are playing out their politics. Obviously, on the streets as well. Yeah. There is a huge vacuum, it seems to me. And I think it's also in the Democratic Party writ large. There is a huge vacuum in terms of an articulated vision of what the Democratic Party should be. I think there's a similar vacuum when it comes to an articulated vision of what progressives within the Democratic Party should be. Yeah. And, you know, and I think to a certain extent, you know, there's probably people who are outside of the Democratic Party trying to push, you know, with some engagement of it. They at least have a little bit more clarity. Things get a lot more complicated, of course, when you're in the middle of government because you're having to make decisions like the one we were talking about with the stimulus. Do we try and get the full loaf, or do we risk these people who are suffering enormously not getting their funding? Because, you know,
but that's if I could interject there. The other thing about that, though, Sam, is that there are problems in this country that actually preexisted COVID-19 and the stimulus. And the reason we haven't been able to rectify those problems from a leftist perspective is because we have never gained enough political capital and actual power. Like, we have not had serious power. Barack Obama was not a progressive. All the progressive organizations suffered during his campaign because all the money went to Obama, not to these organizations. We were neutralized. Our power was neutralized. And without that kind of power, we cannot affect the kind of changes that needed to have happened before COVID-19. And I feel a lot of people are trying to say we can do a one-all fix-all with this stunt. You're not going to undo the damage that has been done over 40 years with one forced vote. It has to be strategic enough to amass power over a series of years. And we're actually headed in that direction. The squad damn near doubled. We can primary, if you want to be angry and allow your anger about progressives being crushed in 2016 and 2020, which we were, if you want to unleash that anger, unleash it on primarying these people. Sending up 10 more squad members is far more powerful than doing a floor vote.
All right, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Okay, sorry.
All right, we're back. Got about a minute and a half here to wrap up. But Ben, it's primary. But then the question is, what is the progressive? And obviously, like, you know, if you're outside the Democratic Party, it's and you could be within the Democratic Party, too. And also see, like, you know, during this time is a good time to organize. It's a good time to build social cohesion and to, maybe help in terms of unions or maybe help, in your community. But from a legislative perspective, what's the strategy there?
I'm going to be honest with you. If we needed a really simple way to express a strategy, which we don't have a cohesive one, I would just say that the future is progressive because it has to be, right? We're either going to do the Green New Deal or better, or else we're going to destroy this planet. We're either going to do Medicare for all or better, or else the people are going to eventually rise up. Right. You're not going to be able to continue to allow the people to suffer in this way. There is going to be a more egalitarian America if there is going to be a future America. So I think we need to list every single policy that we believe in, from the Green New Deal to Medicare for all, and list it as a moral imperative for the existence of this country. America will not survive the pressures of neoliberalism and trickle down economics. We simply will not.
Ben Dixon of The Benjamin Dixon Show, always a pleasure. And that is all our time for today. Remember, if you missed any part of this program, you can see it on the Choice Network or channel on the Peacock app at 5 p.m. and 10 p.m. Check it out there. All right, folks, see you on Monday. And And for those of you who are sticking around, Ben, we have you for a couple more moments.
Whatever you need, man. I'm
but,
here.
let's talk a little bit on Lonnie. This is a big missed opportunity because, you know, when the idea was first floated by Jimmy Dore, and it's gotten a lot of attention for him, and I'm
which by design, you know.
So. Well, I mean, I don't.
He's got to pay for that house somehow.
I don't know if it's necessarily by design as much as it is like sort of the same way that Trump works. It's just sort of like he has some psychological things that sort of drive him in this fashion, and then it does
to fixate on one particular point. And if you don't do this exact thing that I say, you're not pure enough, like me, the one who berates every.
But what level of absurdity is it for this conversation to have been about this one guy? Like, it's pretty pathetic of a statement of the left that Jimmy Dore is the hill they're going to die on up against the squad. To me, that's a level of absurdity that is so destructive to the left. Like, come on, folks.
I've been encouraged to see, and there are some people who I respect who have not, denounced a lot of this childish fixation on one particular vote, which I think, now that I've thought about it, could be more counterproductive. A caller the other day pointed out how Mitch McConnell really wanted us to bring Medicare for All Mitch McConnell wanted Bernie Sanders's vote on Medicare for All, which hadn't happened after he had all those co-sponsors, basically because he knew it would fail. So he could rub it in the faces of the Democrats and then set it back. I mean, I'm not fully opposed to a vote on Medicare for All, but it's 25th down the list of priorities, if at all a priority, because we need more members before we can actually gain momentum on that topic. There's so many more important things.
There was value in the idea of leveraging that vote. And the problem was, and you know, when I first heard this idea, that's what my feeling was, like, there's value in ledgering the vote. I don't know if the Medicare for All vote is necessarily the vote, the thing to go for. I think at the time I said maybe it's committee things. Wanted to take a little bit of
minimum wage, which more members agree on.
Yeah, I mean, take a little time to look into it, and then you get a response from at least one of the key figures that you want to pressure, and they say, committee seats might be better. And instead of like engaging with that and saying, okay, you're on one part of you're on the inside, we're on the outside, you have a better sense of like how things work there.
Yeah.
And what might actually bring material benefits to people?
Well, that would require an ounce of humility.
Well, it's not just Jimmy. I mean, people have to take responsibility. If you're listening there, and Lush is just sitting there, basically yelling "F you" into the microphone, is where you get your political wisdom from. A guy who doesn't even know the difference between a filibuster or is sitting there happy to have Peter Thiel be on the Supreme Court. You've got to educate yourself. And honestly, like, it's not just like, you know, all he has is a microphone. He has no more or less than what we have. It's just that some of the members of his audience are just sitting there.
Oh, but he does have something that we have, and he's lacking something that we have. We all know that at the core of this, honestly, and I'm not going to go into the new YouTube number games, but I do believe that he has the insight that anger is lucrative. And we all know that anger is lucrative. Every one of us who do this know that if we rile up the progressive base and just tell you what makes you angry, we can buy a house. Right? That said, we don't do that, right? I think each and every one of us know that if we kept Donald Trump in office, all of our bottom lines would probably be amazing going forward. But we were never going to sacrifice our integrity and leave Donald Trump in office just because it's financially good for us. And similarly, I would never attack the people who are closest to accomplishing something that we really want simply because, in my best estimation, there's a financial motive. That's just my estimation, and I don't ascribe that to Sam or the Majority Report.
Go on, Sam.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily a financial motivation. I think it hurts. I mean, it helps when the cash comes rolling in. That's one thing you don't question, really. But I think it's just a question of like nihilism. I think it's just really, in the same way that, like, I don't know, is Is Alex Jones exclusively about money? No, no, no. You'd have to be.
He also loves attention.
I think he is. He has like emotional issues that Alex Jones does. I think he's nuts, and I think and he thinks he's right, and so he'll make up stuff, and he won't read stuff, and he'll just get his information from wherever. You know,
so you think Jimmy really believes what he says then? You think he's like a true believer in his own rhetoric?
I think that Jimmy believes that that everything is garbage, and that I don't think he actually believes in trying to get his agenda is to just destroy the Democratic Party and to and it pays, and his cynicism pays. I think that's his agenda. I don't think his agenda, I will tell you this. I don't think he gives a shit about
that's true.
Yeah, there's also a TMZ element to it too, right? Where it's basically personality focused. And it's often, I keep saying this, but it's often like female politicians or politicians of color too. I mean, the fact that he went after Cori Bush and Jamal Bowman for no reason. And Ocasio-Cortez and whatever, like Tulsi Gabbard never held to account. I understand it's not a one size fits all for that, but those are the directions of his ire in many senses.
But listen, and make no mistake about it. Tulsi Gabbard said, like, I'm not coming on your show for whatever reason, because she's, you know, tacked too far to the right or whatever it is. And then all of a sudden he would launch at her. I mean, that's what
triggered it. Yeah.
Triggered all this stuff.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, Bernie Sanders emotional. Wouldn't come on a show, whatever it is. And so,
and you don't have to read anything, and you don't actually have to be good at politics. Like, actually understand things, you can just be like they took the justifiable outrage of the 2016 presidential campaign and the bias against Bernie Sanders, and people went in different directions, right? Like, Ben, your show went in a different direction, and, or not different, but like covered it in the way that you thought you were going to cover it,
right?
And there was a branch of the left online or whatever that is that made it about how the Democratic Party is beyond repair. And everyone that becomes a part of the Democratic Party is corrupt and, you know, beholden to Nancy Pelosi. And then when AOC said Mama Bear and called her that, well, that was doors opening to say, see, she's just like them. She's on the cover of Vanity Fair. So that must mean that she's actually a terrible person and not fighting for the same things. He literally said, she's standing in the way of your health care. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. That's what he
Wait. Jimmy Dore actually said that. I didn't see that part.
Actually, you know what? Let's file it. We got a pen here. Let's play the clip.
Yeah, well, sure. I'll send it to.
No, we have it. I think.
Oh, you have it already. This is amazing. Yep.
I mean, I sort of determined not to get into it, but yeah, here it is. Here it is.
This report came out against you. Kyle Kalinske just turned on you. AOC. Did you see that video?
Kyle Kalinske just turned on you.
Guess who else? Crystal Ball. Guess who else? Jimmy Dore. Guess who else? Medea Benjamin, Cornel, everybody sees through
West
you.
Cornel West did not try to turn
everybody on sees through you, except your fucking sycophant DSA dickheads in fucking Brooklyn.
Jimmy, we see through you.
Even my detractors see through you. That's right.
I don't know about that.
This is not healthy.
It's online nonsense. Like, yeah, okay. Look, I think Kyle's done good work. Do I think AOC watched his video on and is aware that Kyle turned on him on her? I think she has worried about.
But I don't. I mean, I personally don't care if Kyle turned on him or her, because this is wrong. They're wrong.
They're wrong.
They're just patently wrong, because the strategery, because that's all it is. It's not a strategy. It's strategery at this point is dead after step two. And you never win a checkers game, let alone a chess game, let alone life, with two steps. The thing here, though, the thing that really, really bothers me is that he's going all the way in on this. He is trying to dethrone.
Yeah.
This really, at the core of this, is a faction of the left that's trying to dethrone the progressive faction that actually got traction and power. My question is, Jimmy, why don't you ask the official that you helped get elected? Like, who's your representative? Why are you going all the way across the continent of the country to New York and putting pressure on a first-term congresswoman who just amassed enough power for us to primary other people. You're asking her to sacrifice that. What about all the other people? Why all this energy for progressives when your strategy itself is never going to yield results? It's like we are shooting. We're in a circle of firing squad. And at the end of it, nobody gets anything except for neoliberalism and trickle-down capitalism.
Is there more video?
He posted a picture once on a magazine with someone Jimmy didn't like. I mean, the one gets more abusive. I don't want to, like, even, you know, it gets worse, but.
Should we play any more? Yeah,
play the rest. I think it's.
Oh, y'all going to make me cuss on it.
But he sees through the squad now. And why AOC? I'm telling, they're pushing her out there because she's the most sympathetic. And so idiots can say, stop attacking her when she is standing she's between you and healthcare and protecting Nancy Pelosi and her career.
Excuse me, guys. Can I respond to that real quick?
Yeah, pause.
Are we off of, like, whatever? What's the rating right now? Is it rated R? Can we cuss?
Yeah, you can cuss.
Yeah,
fuck Jimmy Dore. This stuff is sociopathy. What he is doing is cashing in on your anger, but he's cashing in with a strategy that's going to leave you without Medicare for all. He is literally, at this point, COINTELPRO for me. He is a Fed at this point because he is coming in to neutralize the only power that progressives really have. And if you and your, and I'm going to do my best not to insult the people who support his idea. It's in my blood to insult you. But I'm not going to, because you really, really need to understand that what he is doing is manipulating you for cash. And much more importantly than him is the fact that he is scullying our chance to get Medicare for all in the next 4 years. He's going to make us kill it right now. That's what he's doing. He's a Fed.
I got news for everybody. There's not going to be Medicare for all in 4 years. That's not happening. This is a 10 to 12 year project, and I got news for everybody. It just got set back by probably more than the 4 years that we just spent with Donald Trump.
Because that's the spokesperson.
This was the whole. Well, it's not even just that. It's just like, look, you know, people like there are extraordinary forces aligned against it.
Yeah.
Instead of having 4 years of slow frustration build under a Clinton administration who is trying out, to expand healthcare in various waves, maybe at that point have taken it to 55, a buy-in on Medicare. Instead, you are now working from a point of, like, people just knowing, like, we could easily go from the frying pan into the fire. Like, right. That's the way that politics work. And you can go back and people can go look at Jimmy's, you know, vision of where we would be today. Elizabeth Warren is the president and the Republican Party having, you know, refused to go along with anything that Donald Trump wanted and all this, and know that the guy has no idea what he's talking about. And here's the thing. It is one thing to pressure the people who are closest to you and to allow them to use that pressure to leverage other things. But you need to do it in coordination with them. You need to do it, not necessarily coordination, but you need to do it like with some awareness of what they can and cannot do. Mm. If I take a hammer or if I take, like, you know, this – and try and use it as a hammer, it's just going to break and I'm not going to have the remote control anymore.
Right.
You know, like, you need to know if you're using something to do something else, you need to know.
But when you focus on personalities and it's just about, like, stick it to Pelosi or stick it to the establishment, you have no awareness of movement building and how long it takes for these organizations to work together to.
We're not
going to
get with five conservative Democrats, corporate Democrats now. On that, commerce.
Yeah.
I got news for you. There's not going to be any movement.
And instead
whatsoever.
Of the left supporting her, right? And instead of the left and or this faction, this whatever 8% of the online left supporting her, she's being shivved from that side and shivved from the other. And then what?
Right.
Do you, not on.
Well, I mean, and then also think about this. Let me ask everyone who thinks Jimmy Dore is well, first of all, Jimmy Dore should never have gotten back in this conversation. Jimmy Dore, let him make his millions. Go to the south of France. Go ahead and get your clicks. But never, ever allow that man to be in the conversation about true progressivism.
I take a certain amount of responsibility for being, I thought it was being charitable, but it was just dumb. Like, frankly, if I thought there was any value in the idea that he, I should have just like brought it up completely.
Separate Cortez responded, so.
Of him raising it, because the guy is incredibly toxic. I figured, you know, 4 years later, cut him a little bit of slack, and that was stupid. It was stupid on my part. It was it was stupid.
I want to ask everybody this question, though. Everybody who still believes in Jimmy Dore, once the squad is gone and Jimmy Dore gets his way, who are you going to pressure?
Right.
Who are you going to pressure? Who are we going to listen to you?
Can we just
finish? Morons.
So we can just wrap it up or wrap it in a bow.
Was there any more of that clip left?
Just because I think it's important to see how he gets himself riled up. It's psychotic.
Standing between you and healthcare and protecting Nancy Pelosi and her career.
Talk about career.
Key organizing moments may look like random uprisings and viral internet moments to some, but they aren't. They are the results of years of targeting, organizing, and people's movements. Hey, this took 2 weeks.
What did?
This took 2 weeks.
Period. Hold
this
on.
This took two weeks.
One second. Okay, so Jimmy doesn't understand what she's saying here.
He doesn't.
Right? I mean, just like how...
He's so stupid, it's unbelievable.
I know.
She is suggesting that actual change takes building on the ground and building a foundation. You see it pop up, and it looks like it's just there for a moment, but it's actually been building for years. Jimmy thinks that his...
He got it done in 2 weeks.
No, it only like look at what I've been able to achieve in 2 weeks.
What did you achieve?
Nothing. He got a story in Business Insider, and he added some subscriptions, and he made some money.
That's it.
That's politics, though, from what I hear from Jimmy's show.
But that's the thing. He doesn't
exactly
in the tweet that she's writing.
Yeah, and then he gets something wrong here too.
Go back and listen to how like just like this stuff is just remedial. Right. Apparently, can do is read a real estate listing.
Key organizing moments may look like random uprisings and viral internet moments to some, but they aren't. They are the results of years of targeting, organizing, and people's movements. Hey, this took 2 weeks. This took 2 weeks. This took 2 weeks. From someone who already went bankrupt from medical bills. It took 2 weeks. How long you been fucking working on this?
Oh my God. Yeah, I
figured this out in 2 weeks, AOC. You liar, you coward, you gaslighter, you standing in the way of people in healthcare. You run on healthcare and then you deny it to us. You dangle it in front of your fucking constituents. And then when you get there, you don't lift up.
Why are y'all doing this to me? I think y'all want me to snap on this motherfucker. God damn. Jimmy Dore, listen, I just got to say this. This has nothing to do with anybody on this show. But Jimmy Dore, you know where to find me, dude. You know where to find me because you ain't suffered nothing, man. You just bought a $2 million house. You bought a house that is probably 10 times the value of what AOC makes in a year. And you're attacking her like you have some moral standing. You are nothing, nothing. Let me stop before I, you never invite me back.
Yeah, I mean, that might be the same video where he claimed that she voted for the CARES Act. There's no evidence of that. She said that she didn't. You don't need to take her at her word for it, but she was speaking out publicly against it. And then I'm hearing,
yeah,
there was a man's voice that said no. But like she could have just not voted for it in general, but it doesn't even matter. Like
She's speaking against it.
Right.
If that's the point, is that it's like that's the cost. There's no cost.
That's not what that clip is. In my opinion, that's not what that clip is about. That clip is about, holy shit, I hit a gold mine. I've struck gold. And if I just keep talking about this, I'm going to keep getting 200,000 views per video. And my bank is going to keep going up. My patrons are going to go up and up. And my notoriety is going to go up and up. And so maybe I won't have to settle for a measly peasly $1.9 million house in LA. And I can go ahead and get me the $5 million one I've been coveting. I'm sorry. This man is destroying the entirety of the progressive movement because leftists are angry and you all are allowing yourselves to be taken to the bank by this clown.
There's no pool, though. And that's
that's the problem. That's why he's doing it. He's got to get a pool.
You're going to be out in LA. You got to get a pool.
You got to have a goddamn pool, man. What kind of ragtag shanty are you living in, Jimmy Dore? 1.9 million with no pool? Come on, man.
Listen, we're not, we're going to talk about this later a little bit, but I'm not doing my normal year end roundup, type of thing this year. Like, I just hated this year so bad that I just don't, but
yeah, fine. Yeah.
Let me just say this, since this is the last time we're going to see you in 2020. Thank you for your coming onto the show on a regular basis. Yeah. Your contribution has been incredibly appreciated. I love the work that you do.
Thanks, man.
And I hope that you have years and that 2021 is an upgrade.
I like you even more than Sam. So.
You guys, I'm trying to get back. I like Sam more than everybody else because I want to be invited back. No, I know. I appreciate you, Emma. Appreciate all of you. Listen, shout out and solidarity and love to the entire Majority Report family and to all of us who know what we're feeling right now, but there's no need for us to even say it. We love all of you, and I definitely love all of the Majority Report and the entire family.
All right, Ben. Good luck. We'll talk to you soon, folks.
Take care.
Check out the Benjamin Dixon Show. All right, and we're going to head into the fun half of the program. You know, like, I literally started the day off. I was like, we're not going to talk about jokes.
I know. And we did it anyway.
I know.
But, you know, maybe we'll just say not next week.
But, you know, it's not like we didn't cover a bunch of other stuff.
We did. We're respectable news people. We covered Congress.
I'm not necessarily convinced of the respectable news people, but we covered other stuff.
We are respectable news people.
Folks, just a reminder, you can support this program, my endeavor to get a pool, by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. That's where I think what we'll do in January, 10% of every membership will go towards
pool.
No, Jimmy's pool.
Oh, right. Maybe, I was going to say, like,
maybe,
what, a
maybe this is like one of those
situations.
Maybe it's one of those situations where it's like, dude, we got you a pool. So how about you just not talk about stuff?
A moratorium on your dumb bullshit.
Right. Here's your pool, dude. Now chill. All right. Look at that. It's got one of those like built in hot tubs. Folks, you can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, your program not only supports the free show, but also gets you extra content every day. And of course, head over for some merch at shop.majorityreportradio.com. You can check it out. We got all sorts of great stuff. I got this.
I forgot to tell you, I accidentally took that t-shirt home. And by accidentally, I mean kind of on purpose.
I was going to say, accidental? I don't think so. Look at that thing. Whoa, are you kidding? That's what I like about the head about that thing. It just sort of looks like it's creeping out of nowhere. But we got a bunch of other great stuff. All sorts of positive.
Left is best.
Do you know where that left is best comes from?
I do, yeah. You told me, okay. You know, like my first day, introductory.
That's it. That's the only thing I tell people.
Yeah.
And folks, don't forget AM Quickie. You can check it out, amquickie.com. 7 minutes of headline news every morning. Free, totally free. Sign up on your podcast app, or you can watch it on YouTube at Majority Report Audio on YouTube. And also, don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Oh, that's what I should get. Get you some of that Majority Report.
Oh, yeah. And then also, there's beanies, too. Did you mention the beanies on the shop?
Are they there now?
Oh, maybe not. Oh, soon enough, they'll be.
I think so.
They're beanies that will make Tim Pool blush.
There you go. Oh, that would be great. We should send one to Tim Pool.
Better than everything.
All right, folks. Check out Left Reckoning. Oh, and today on Nomi's show, do we know who's on Nomi's show? Okay, who do we got? I don't have the list of names. Here we go. It is Tara Huska, Jovanka Beckles, and Marianella DePrill on the Nomi Key Show. And you can find that at youtube.com/the Nomi Key Show.
Damn, those are some good graphics.
Yeah. No, they do a good job over there.
Yeah.
They do a good job over there. Folks, also, you can find Left Reckoning. Not exactly sure what's happening on with that. And don't forget the Antifada. They have their Twitch stream now. To go to twitch.tv/TheAntifada. And as always, patreon.com/theantifada. See you in the fun half.
RM for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost has what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danner's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds.